Hello and welcome to Your Best Self, a podcast about careers. I'm your host, Faye Rowlands, lawyer and journalist, and together in this podcast, we'll hear from inspirational people spanning the worlds of business, politics, law, media, science, art, and more, sharing what they love most about their jobs, how they handle setbacks, and offer listeners their tips to career success. I hope this podcast informs and inspires you to think big and encourages you to go after the dream job you want. Well, as the Taoiseach announced Ireland's reopening strategy last night, my guest this week knows what it's all about covering politics in a pandemic. A mathematics whiz kid, her career has taken her from investment banking to the newsroom. You'll likely best know her as the face of RTE's political news coverage, bringing us the latest news and developments from government buildings to our TV screens each evening. She's reported everywhere from the streets of New York to the papal conclave in Rome and the London bombings of 2007. And she's covered some of the biggest national stories, from the banking inquiry to the vindication of Garda whistleblower Maurice McCabe at the Charlton Tribunal. It is, of course, Sandra Hurley. In this episode, we discuss why she swapped mathematics for the newsroom, how the public's perception of politics has changed, and she tells me about the story she covered during her time in New York that would later be recounted on television in the popular legal drama The Good Wife. She also offers lots of sage advice for young aspiring journalists out there. I hope you enjoy the episode. Sandra, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, Faye. Great to be here.
Delighted to have you on the podcast, Sandra. So many people, of course, will know you thanks to the public-facing nature of your job. But I'd love to take you back, if I can, to your childhood. What was it like growing up for you? And was it always inevitable for you that you were going to become a journalist, even from those early days?
No, I'd have to say for me, it was not inevitable. I think I didn't even realize when I was at school that journalism was a real career choice that was available to me, even though I had a huge interest in news. We had every newspaper in my house. My parents were both fascinated by news. We had a big discussion in current affairs. My dad would have read a kind of every history book. But at the same time, I think I was more interested in studying law at one stage. That was in my early school years. But then in my later years in school, I was particularly good at maths. I got diverted into one of those maths programs in university that you do at school. So that was in UCC because I'm from Cork. So then it seemed natural to me that I would study maths at university. So I did a degree in pure maths in Trinity in Dublin. So it's a total leap. And I think people sometimes find it really odd that I went from maths to journalism, but it was a bit of a process. Even when I was in college, I was hugely interested in news. But I ended up working in banking for a while in New York after college. I realized that really wasn't for me. You know, investment banking, very corporate. I was very young. I think I was around 20. So I took a break, did some traveling, and then I went back to study journalism. I did a master's in journalism in DCU, and that really set me up for the beginning of my career, which is about 20 years ago now.
Wow. And so you think maybe it was your family and the household at home that kind of sparked that interest in news in you from a young age and politics?
Yes, definitely. We were all really interested in politics, really interested in news. And I think it was unusual in the sense that my family would have bought every newspaper available. So, you know, growing up in Cork, we had what was then the Cork Examiner, but we also got the Irish Times. And on Sunday, we'd get everything from the Sunday Business Post, the Sunday Independent. Back then, you also had the Sunday Press, the Tribune. My mother would have liked some of the British tabloids, things like the Mail and the Express, totally different presentation in terms of news. But that was really fascinating to me. Also, I was always interested in the way that different outlets present the news in a slightly different way. They take a different slant. Some take a kind of, they put it together in a way where they are presenting a particular viewpoint to people. Others present it in a more neutral way. And I think in particular, obviously, in what we do in RTE News, it's a public service broadcaster. But that really sparked my interest.
And it was interesting to learn, actually, that you had done your speciality or your background had been in mathematics. As you said, you'd gone to Trinity. Some might say that's an unusual choice or an unusual speciality to have for a journalist. What had sparked your interest in mathematics, or why had you decided to pursue that course in Trinity? And how did you find those years in Trinity?
I was particularly good at maths in school. I suppose I you know, would have got A's all through maths, but I was interested in lots of things in school. But I think because I got diverted into one of those university programs very early on, I think from about the age of 14, I was in university doing all those extracurricular maths courses, as are a lot of people across the country who are good at maths in school. So it just seemed, I was kind of funneled into maths in a way, and it just seemed really clear to me that I would go down that path then and continue to study it in college. And there's different things you can do with maths. If I look back at some of the people I was in college with, you know, some are in banking and finance, some are very much still in pure maths. They might be in universities, or there are others who set up their own companies. I can think of a few people who know, you know, early on, and I'm talking about around 2000, they realized that big data was going to be a thing and they specialized in that area. They've set up companies, startups that have done really well over the past two decades. So there's a lot of different areas you can go into from maths. But I know it is a bit of a jump, but I think I realized, especially from being in banking, that I didn't want to stay in banking, particularly at a young age. You've got an interest in lots more in different types of things. And I was fascinated by current affairs. So I took it from there, really.
So you found yourself in New York working in banking, said, look, this maybe is not for me. What was the lightning bolt moment then when you decided I'm going to do journalism?
I think I knew that I would have to sort of transition to journalism, and many people had recommended a master's in journalism in DCU. A lot of people in Ireland would do that. There's other good courses. DIT is another one. A lot of colleagues would have done that. And that's a really good course for, they take in people with from different backgrounds with different specialities, and you spend a year working in journalism, and then you do sort of placements and internships with different outlets, and that really sets you up for the beginning of your career. You spend all your time talking about journalism, you cover radio journalism, TV, different things, and I think it is still a key route for lots of people. I'm asked by young journalists, are people in school who want to study journalism, what would I recommend? I usually recommend doing a master's. You don't need to study journalism for 4 years. It's not a bad thing, but I don't think you need to study it for 4 years, because you really learn on the job. And that's the important thing, that you kind of learn cumulatively by going out there and just covering stories. So a master's is probably a good grounding in it. And then it gets you in there to your first jobs.
And Sandra, did you find yourself early on gravitating to broadcast, or did you like all aspects of the media course?
I think I was definitely a print journalist with my huge interest in newspapers, and that's definitely the direction I wanted to go. So my first job was with the Sunday Business Post. There were great editors there at the time. Damien Kybridge was there, who had been one of the people who set up the newspaper. Ted Harding was another editor, and they were fantastic to work with. I think they also would have looked at my background and the fact that I'd worked in banking and saw me as a business journalist. So I did a lot of business journalism over my early years, both there and then with the Irish Examiner. I covered both business and news and covered lots of different things. I did a short stint actually in the Sunday Independent for about 6 weeks before I got the full-time job in RTE. That was kind of fascinating as well, seeing how they put stories together. It's all different. Newspapers all take a different approach, but it's great experience to work in lots of different places.
And can you remember, Sandra, what your first day in a newsroom was like?
Yes, I think I remember the Sunday Business Post. They had a really kind of egalitarian approach in that you're brought straight in on your first day on a Monday into the main news meeting with all these famous, well, I would have considered them very famous, well-known journalists, people like Emily O'Reilly, who's now the European Ombudsman, Muel Muratainen, very well-known journalist. And you're sitting in a room with all of them and Damien Kybert, and they go around the room and they ask everybody on your first day, you know, what stories do you have for Sunday? What are you pitching? And then they came around to me at the end of it, and I wasn't expecting it. And no surprise, I didn't really have any particular ideas on my first day. I'm not going to say that I immediately knew what to do, but I think it is a testament to the type of newspaper that they ran, that everybody was given a shot to pitch your ideas. And again, that's a big thing in journalism. If you come up with the ideas, if you can think of angles on running stories, then you can run with it. And that if you keep concentrating on getting those ideas out there, then you will always be employable, because that's what people are looking for.
And I understand, Sandra, as well, that you also spent a little bit of time over at the New York Post writing for them. What was that experience like for you over in New York?
Yes, well, after a few years in RTE, I took a sabbatical for a year, and I had a green card for the US. So I figured I would definitely use it. And I always wanted to go back to New York and live there as a journalist. So I went over and worked for the New York Post. So everybody knows, really well-known tabloid owned by Rupert Murdoch. It was fascinating. I worked in their big building on Sixth Avenue, which had Fox News in it, Fox Business, all his different media interests. And the New York Post is an amazing newspaper. It's sort of seen as a blue collar tabloid in New York. They cover all sorts of stories, but they have a very particular presentation and a very particular style, almost the language that they use to describe things. So I would go out and cover stories, and they changed some of the language to make it sort of New York Post-y, like a baby would become a tot. They just have these particular type of words that they use to describe things. They'd almost translate your journalism to make it presentable to their readers. But they're very successful, and they obviously had amazing headlines. They just had some genius headlines throughout the years. They're really famous for that. And the big thing they would push you for as a reporter was to get really colorful quotes from people. And that's something worth remembering as a journalist. That's something that's really illustrative. You know, one sentence from an interviewee that might just encapsulate something in a really interesting way, and that they might then use it in the headline. So I covered a lot of interesting stories. That was around 2007 to 2008. So it was during the New York primaries were on for the presidential election while I was there. So it was Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama. So I covered some stories related to that. That was fascinating. I covered City Hall politics. I covered the death of Heath Ledger, the Australian actor. He was found dead in Soho. There was a lot of stories around that. And there was a big scandal as well. The New York State Governor, Elliot Spitzer, had been caught up in a prostitution ring. That was an enormous story across every American outlet. He was a very well-known U.S. Democrat, somebody who probably had presidential hopes down the line, came from a well-known American family, a New York family. And I covered a lot of stories related to that, including his resignation with his wife at his side. And I don't know if anyone is listening is a fan of The Good Wife, but there's a scene in the early, the first episode where Chris North, who plays the husband, and he's cheated on his wife, and he resigns and she's standing next to him, and it's actually based on that resignation. So I remember being there and witnessing his wife kind of stony faced next to Elliot Spitzer as he resigned, and the whole thing was pretty awful, I'm sure, for all the family. But there was just a huge fallout after that. So it was a great way to explore New York as well, because they sent you out to every borough. I got to know Queens, Brooklyn, all sorts of far-flung different places in New York, and great access because you could get behind the scenes and you got into places, which is another great thing about journalism, which is that you get a front row seat at all these fascinating events.
And did you enjoy the pace of life in New York, Sandra? Could you have seen yourself staying on there as a reporter, or were you happy to return to Ireland?
Yeah, I love living in New York. I think it, who doesn't love New York? Whatever you're into is there and it's available to you. I'd love music and going to gigs and all that kind of thing. And there was just so much on all the time. The pace was amazing. People push themselves really hard. They get up really early in the morning and they stay out late at night and they get up early and go back to work. I mean, it's just the pace is fairly frenetic. I think for me, I had met my partner at that stage, so I wanted to come back to Ireland to be with him. So he always says that he wrecked my New York dream, but I'll allow it several years on and a few children later. So that was one of the reasons I came back, and I was delighted to come back to RTE as well. I think one of the things about living and working in New York as a journalist is it would be hard to make a very good living there as a journalist unless you're at the very, very higher echelons of in terms of journalism. It is a very expensive city to live. You know, everyone talks about the rent is crazy, but everything's really expensive. And journalism is not a career over there that you're going to find it easy to make ends meet.
You returned, obviously, to Ireland with the national broadcaster, RTE. How has your role with RTE evolved over the years? I mean, what was your initial role there?
Yes, I've been with RTE 17 years now. I think I just passed an anniversary, which is quite a long time. But I think in journalism, RTE is, it's a really good, secure home to be in. So I have done lots of different things there. So I started as a radio news reporter, mostly on the News at One programme. It's a landmark agenda setting programme, still runs at lunchtime every day. Sean O'Rourke was the presenter. I learned so much from him. He's a fantastic journalist. And I worked as a reporter covering lots of stories. I was sent, I think, to Rome for a papal conclave. I went to London after the terrorist bombings in 2007. And I also edited the program, which is another step in terms of making that selection of stories and dealing with the fast moving program while it's on air and watching out for all those pitfalls that can happen while the program is being broadcast. So it was great training in terms of that. When I came back from New York, I did a stint down in the political unit in Leinster House for a year. And then after that, I did several years as a TV journalist. So covering a real variety of stories, politics, a lot of finance, a lot of business, given my background. I covered the banking inquiry for a year, which was in Leinster House. It's kind of been consigned to history now, but at the time it was top of the agenda, had led the news many days. And another big long running story that I covered was the Charlton Tribunal in Dublin Castle, which was an inquiry into lots of allegations related to Maurice McCabe, the Garda whistleblower, and how he'd been treated within the guards. And that was an incredible story as well that crept into so many areas of Irish life. It took in TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, the HSE, the Gardaí, the media. It just brought everything together. And that was an incredible story to cover as well.
Wow. And Sandra, I'd love to hear, you know, in terms of your early journalistic career, what was one of the biggest lessons that you learned early on in your journalistic career?
I think when you're starting out, you have to realize that you have to kind of go and make the breaks happen for yourself. So I would have had a period where I wasn't a staff journalist at an outlet. So you have to freelance and you have to almost keep hustling and keep offering suggestions to organizations, keep sending emails, keep ringing people. You have to be really tenacious and persistent to get those breaks and start getting your name in print or start getting pieces broadcast. You have to offer to do lots of different types of stories and be very enthusiastic. And I think a big thing now is also that journalists have to cover, there's no real demarcation anymore between print and broadcast so much, because if you look at the newspapers, they're doing podcasts, they've set up studios to do video journalism. And if you look at RTE News, it doesn't just do TV and radio. Online is an enormous part of what it does. We all write long pieces and news updates for the website. So journalists have to cover every area. They have to cover every platform. And that's something that young journalists need to be really mindful of, being good at the technology. And when you're covering a story, covering it for sort of every platform, you know, you might be able to video something on your phone while you're interviewing somebody, and think of all the different ways you can put that information out there.
And Sandra, would there have been somebody who you would have turned to in those early years in your career that you would have sought advice from, or would have been in a way a mentor to you?
You know, I was thinking about that. For me, I don't think I really had a particular mentor. I would have had family people I would have spoken to. There would have been some older journalists where I worked with, who you learn from all the time. I mentioned Sean O'Rourke there, who was just a brilliant journalist to work for. But I think you just soak it up all the time from being out there. And it is that thing in journalism that you're kind of, you learn on the job. And in your early days, you're learning how to find angles on stories and how to keep them running. And you just have to get out there and do it.
And would there have been somebody who inspired you in your career path?
I don't know. I think career paths now are so diverse, and people have to really, they have to move around a lot and they have to do different types of things. I think in terms of political journalism, when I was younger, I would have really looked up to Emily O'Reilly and Wael Muirtainen, who I mentioned there, because they were some of the political journalists who I saw very early on. And they were women as well, I suppose, in quite a male dominated industry. It's not quite as male dominated now at all. I mean, there are lots and lots of female political correspondents. But they were both just so good at their job and really good to work with.
Yeah, on that point, Sandra, it does feel certainly to me like we're seeing more and more political female journalists both on our screens and in print. And we have more, you know, females in Dáil Éireann than ever before. How do you think that this has changed the public's perception of politics?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there are more women covering politics. I think there's probably a very much an equal amount at this stage between women and men covering politics. On the political side, there's still not as many female TDs, and that is still a really big problem. And there's lots of reasons why Women are seen have a tougher time. Maternity leave is something that we've seen come up recently, you know, with Helen McEntee, the minister, going on maternity leave at the end of this month. There's no formal mechanism for a female politician to take that. So that is a real problem. Hopefully, what's happened with Helen McEntee has given impetus, I suppose, to others to go on to politicians to actually come together and sort this out once and for all. But I think it's important for the public perception for covering current affairs. As with anything, you have to see a pretty equal amount of women and men, and it has to be filtered through both those perspectives.
And Sandra, you know, politics, it's a really dynamic, really interesting area. It also generates a lot of opinions. You have opinions flying left, right and centre on Twitter. And I was wondering, as a journalist, how do you, you know, blot out a lot of those opinions and try to sort of remove yourself in a way from the equation to be able to report on political matters in the impartial and objective way that's required?
Yes, well, certainly for RTE, that is a key part of it. You have to be fair and impartial, and you're not putting your personal slant into a story. You're trying to present all sides to it and allow the audience to make up their mind. I think all journalists have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Twitter. We are all addicted to it and we're on there all the time. And if you break a story, you want to get it first on Twitter and have it before somebody else. But you're also, we all are aware that when you get feedback on Twitter, you can, it may not be representative of the wider thinking on a particular story. As we know, with lots of social media online, it tends to be quite polarized. The opinions can be quite extreme. And something else that you get an insight into is the abuse that politicians get. I could tweet about a member of the government and something that they say, and I'm included then in the replies with people giving out back to that politician. And some of it can be fair comment, but some of it really goes beyond the pale, I think. And that is something really difficult for all politicians to deal with at the moment. It's really hard for them, I think, to cope with the level of abuse that they get.
Do you think that's something we're seeing more and more of late?
Yes, I think in recent years, there's no question. Another story that I covered actually was Joan Burton being trapped in her car in Jobstown a few years ago at a water charges protest. Labour had become sort of a lightning rod for some of the discontent with the cutbacks at the time, with the austerity we were seeing in that Fine Gael Labour government. And Joan Burton, I think as a woman, particularly got a lot of that abuse. And it is definitely, she has spoken about it since, so have other female politicians, but it's not just women. I think lots of male politicians are dealing with this as well. Everybody's entitled to their opinion in relation to politicians and the job they're doing, but some of the abuse is really just really uncalled for. It's very personalized. It talks about people's families, and some of the other stuff that people get online is really unconscionable.
And looking then to the international media landscape, there can sometimes be this perception that journalists have a very close working relationship with politicians and, you know, can work in tandem. I mean, is there a balance that needs to be struck there to be, I suppose, close enough to be able to get the information that's needed for the public, but also maintain that sense of distance so you can keep that impartiality and that sense of distance?
I think that's a really good question, because it's something that political journalists are accused of all the time, of being too close to maybe senior members in government. And it is exactly what you speak of. There is a balance to be struck there. You do need high level contacts. You need to have good relationships with people. You need to be able to get that information and to get people at the end of the phone to update you on what's happening, and that insight that you can bring then to the audience, because you can filter that information from many different sources. But yes, you have to be mindful of the fact of not becoming, I suppose, too close, and of retaining that impartiality in terms of the coverage. And perhaps if something negative is in the media about a particular politician, you have to cover that in an impartial way and approach everything, I suppose, in a neutral fashion.
And Sandra, you've mentioned so many interesting stories there throughout the course of our conversation, but I wonder if you had to distill it down to sort of one, maybe not favourite, but one that was really significant story for you that you covered, what might that be?
I think probably the tribunal that I mentioned in relation to Maurice McKay, because it ran for so long, it ran for a year. The hours were insane. It was a really demanding story, but there was just so many twists and turns in it. I think not everything turned out as had been predicted at the beginning, but it was very important for Maurice McCabe and his family that he was vindicated on lots of fronts. But it was that nexus, I think, between the media, the guards, the HSE. It just had all these elements that really made it into a really fascinating story to cover. And I think I'll never forget that time. It was particularly demanding, as I said, but as a journalist, it's just fascinating to cover that stuff and to be sort of front row and get that insight into what's going on.
And Sandra, I know it's probably a difficult question, particularly as a journalist, because no day is the same. But, you know, what might a typical working day look like for you? I know it's not a typical 9-to-5 job.
Yes, it's definitely not a 9-to-5 job. I think people outside the media find that difficult to understand. Sometimes friends used to ask me, you know, why would you be at work at 9 o'clock in the evening? You know, well, actually, there's a television news going out and it's quite a big program, so you have to stick around for it. I think there's no really typical day, but at the same time, you probably start off by going through all the newspapers, listening to Morning Ireland and assimilating what's happening that day, looking ahead to what's going to emerge during the day. And then, of course, there's loads of surprises that you didn't think were going to happen when you start the day. It tends to be a bit of a slower start if you're not in radio. Now, radio reporters obviously work really hard in the morning. For others, it can kind of start slowly and gear up then as the day goes on. But there's just been so many surprises. And the last year has been incredible covering politics in a time of the pandemic. There have been so many last minute cabinet meetings. There was an emergency cabinet meeting last Friday. It has been incredible to cover, incredibly busy, incredibly detailed. And it's a kind of fascinating time to live through as well and to watch as the political system grapples with tackling the pandemic and what that means, I suppose, for how different political parties are faring.
And do you think maybe this year as well, in particular with COVID, that people now are more hungry for, you know, fast, accurate information more than ever?
I think that has been borne out. I know in RTE, many of the programmes, the audience levels are up, and there are things like Leo Varadkar's address on St. Patrick's Night last year got a huge audience. I think at the time, those addresses to the public had real resonance because it was so unusual. And yes, there is always such a demand for fast and accurate information. And that's one of the things I've noticed over the course of my career. Many journalists would say that the demand for speed has really increased all the time. It's really important also to be accurate, but that always the push for speed and for getting stuff out there quickly. And then the news cycle turning over so fast, that's something that's also almost fascinating and terrifying to follow, because stories come and go very, very quickly now as well.
And also, you know, we have seen this year, as you said, the importance of people getting this information and getting it quickly, that need for speed. How can we also ensure, I suppose, the future of journalism? Because it's definitely in a time of flux where things are changing. A lot of media organizations are struggling. What can we do to sort of, I suppose, ensure that the future of quality journalism?
Yes, I think it is a really difficult time. I mean, the funding model for journalism has been pretty broken for a long time. But newspapers, I think their subscriptions in a lot of cases have gone up. We've got it in Ireland. A few of the newspapers have introduced new paywalls just over the recent while, the Irish Examiner, the Irish Independent. So we'll see how those go. RTE is in the middle of waiting, I suppose, to hear what the future of the Media Commission comes up with in terms of a future model for public service broadcasting. For journalists, I think it's about explaining to people and trying to lead and show why there's value in the reporting that's being done and the information that's being put out there. And I suppose illustrating to people that good journalism is worth paying for. And that, I know, is a difficult message to sell at the moment, but one that is going to have to be grappled with.
And Sandra, you know, I'd love to hear as well, if you're comfortable to share, maybe an experience where you had in your career a setback or a disappointment, and what you learned from that situation and how you overcame it.
Oh, well, I've definitely gone for jobs that I have not got. I'm not going to cite any here, but you have to just move on. I mean, allow yourself a little time to pick yourself up. I can think of one job that I really thought I was going to get, and I was very disappointed not to get it. But, you know, you have to regroup. There's always more opportunities. It is tough to take, but you just allow yourself a little time to get over it and then get out there again and go on to the next opportunity. And sometimes it just works out for the best. It really does. And there's plenty more things you can do.
And Sandra, looking to the future then, in terms of your career aspirations, is there anything on your bucket list, either career-wise or personal-wise, that you'd like to achieve?
Well, I'm really enjoying covering politics at the moment. As I said, it has been an amazing time in news, and so much is happening so quickly around government decisions and the opposition take on all of that. So I'm quite happy doing that at the moment. I suppose for somebody my age, I'm not sure I will stay in journalism forever, for many more decades. I think it's as a career option, it's a fascinating career for all the reasons I've been talking about, but I'm not sure it's something you're going to do over an entire lifetime. There are other things that you might want to do. And I think that's pretty universal, isn't it, in terms of careers, that everybody now moves on a little bit more. A job isn't necessarily for life. And I think you just have to kind of keep moving on and moving on to different things. So I'll see what the future brings, but maybe not journalism forever.
And Sandra, while I have you here, it would be really remiss of me not to ask you if you had any advice for young aspiring political journalists out there.
Yes, I get asked this a lot. I think pay attention to current affairs. You have to be consuming news from lots of different outlets and understand the different presentation that different outlets will bring to stories. You have to be really across that. It is difficult during a pandemic to get out there so much. I was mentoring some students from Trinity. They have a program there. And I was hoping that I could bring them into Leinster House and show them around kind of informally. But it just hasn't been possible at the moment because, you know, everywhere is trying to limit the number of people getting out there. So it's a difficult time to start a career. But at the same time, young journalists are still getting out there all the time. I think you have to be open to all the different technologies, all the different outlets, do as much as broadly as possible and do it across every platform.
Sandra, thanks so much for your great advice. It was a pleasure speaking to you on the podcast today.
Great. Thank you, Faye.
Thanks for listening to Your Best Self. If you enjoyed this podcast, please hit the subscribe button or leave me a review.